You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
I always thought Christopher is a great name. My younger brother, who I'm very close with, is named Christopher. So I've always been very partial to the name.
Yeah, me too. My family calls me Chris, and they called me Chris when I was growing up. And then, you know, I grew up and did things with my life. And then I decided that I like Christopher better. And it's on my birth certificate. So it's like, well, that's me.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. First question, we're here with Christopher St. John, an artist based in Eugene, Oregon. We're going to talk to him about his painting, sculpture, and just art in general, and some of the other things he might dabble with artistically. But Christopher, thanks for being on the program Something Rather Than Nothing. And I wanted to ask right off the bat, is what were you like as a young child?
That's funny. I was mopping the studio floor and I was thinking about this question and how maybe there's two answers that maybe people give to this kind of question. So there's like the normal answer, which is, oh, I did these things and I had parents and I moved around. But then, you know, if you've had trauma in your life, then there's different answer that you give. And I was like, well, yeah, how do I talk about that? And you know, the truth of that and that aspect of my life has been important to my work and my development as an artist. So, you know, I was a pretty quiet kid, and my father was in the Marine Corps. He was a career person, moved around a lot. He was pretty abusive, violent, emotionally abusive, physically abusive. I had some sexual trauma in my life. So, you know, it put me in a particular place, and I grew up at a time when, you know, those kinds of things, when they were happening to children, especially on the bases that I moved around, weren't really recognized maybe as much as they are today. And, you know, it's like I was talking with my partner before, we were talking about how people raise dogs now, which is so different than how maybe we raised dogs when we were young. Our family kicked dogs, and that's just what you did. Nowadays, people are like, oh, my God, that's horrible. So
sure. Right.
But, you know, when I wasn't in those spaces, I was a quiet kid, and I liked to be alone in nature. I had the privilege of living on Hawaii when I was around 10, and I was really allowed to run around on the leeward side, the windward side of Oahu and Kaneohe, Makapu Peninsula. And that was a real magical experience, just having the run of, you know, this whole beached peninsula with forest to be and to explore and to get really connected with the natural world. And that was a real formative experience for me. And when I go back from that, I think about when I was younger, and the kinds of memories that really stick with me that are positive are just being at the roots of trees and playing. You know, I've always had a real fondness and love for trees.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'd say, you know, my family moved around quite a lot. We settled in Tennessee, in Memphis, a little town called Munford. Spent most of my formative growing up there, like sixth grade until I graduated from high school. So I've traveled quite a lot.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for you know, really, you know, taking that head on as far as, you know, how you can approach that question. You know, just speaking directly with you, I haven't always asked that question, and I kind of like have that out there because, yeah, there can be two very different ways of answering it. And I find for me that, you know, when it comes to art and what role art plays in your life, I think there's connection to strong emotions, connecting to trauma or not connecting to it, or whatever the case might be, is that those experiences really inform how we see things or how it's impacted. Or I find that, you know, maybe moving away from art, maybe being like, you know, having difficulty express yourself because of those traumatic experiences. But yeah, I really want to, you know, thank you for kind of like bringing that into the fore with the artistic experience. You know, in doing this podcast, it does, I don't always get into that. And sometimes politics don't come into things. And not that they have to with each interview, but there's a lot that goes into art. And I like to try to get the components that, you know, make it so necessary for some of us. Do you feel that? Do you feel that it's necessary for you to create art, or that you've been compelled to do so over time?
Oh, absolutely. I can remember from a very young age, really feeling drawn to wanting to make things. And even as, you know, as early as kindergarten, you know, being disappointed when I wasn't being placed on the finger painting table or the clay table, and instead being put with the boys, the blocks, or, you know, some game or activity, and not being particularly good at it. I remember being frustrated with that. But it's just something that stuck with me. And my family on my mom's side is there's artistic talent that runs through that. So, you know, there's a genetic component to that as well. But I definitely would say that it's something that I've been felt called to do, and something that it's just in my makeup. It's hard for me to be anything else besides that, besides somebody who just constantly processes and makes things.
Did you have a moment when, you know, you had created something in whatever form where you said, or the reception that you got, you said to yourself, geez, I'm an artist. Did you have that moment?
I remember when there was an experience that I had where when I was in Hawaii and we would go out to recess, and I didn't really enjoy playing on the jungle gym with the other kids because the noise bothered me. I found it really confusing, and it would put me in a weird place. So I just sought out like good quiet places on the playground, and there was a tree that I always enjoyed looking at. And I would take my notebook out with me and try to draw that tree. I did that for like weeks, and I failed like miserably. But, you know, I kept wanting to do that, even though I really struggled with that. And that experience in particular, always just, there was something, and there was a recognition, I think, in that moment of seeing and taking that experience of seeing and being, wanting to put that on paper, wanting to record that, wanting to capture that, and wanting to have the skills necessary to do that, to translate this feeling that I had looking at this tree.
Yeah, I've never quite had the connection to the trees as you described until very recently. I had actually arrived at it intellectually, and then really just kind of physically started to feel how I felt differently being next to trees. And I think that's probably a dynamic, you know, you recognized early on. And I know in the things that you write, it seems to be very, very important. Let me say something. I think it's tough for folks, you know, whenever I have painters or you do sculpture as well, for folks to be able to see, you know, to see what it is in your work as we talk. When I do an episode with a musician, it tends to be a different dynamic because, you know, we play a track and you're like, hey, that's, you know, that's some good hip hop or whatever the case might be. But my way of getting into this, and maybe we can get into kind of the physical characteristics or the symbols within your work, is I believe this is your description of your work. And if it's not, if you could just clarify when I'm done. Your work touches on the incredible luck we have in living on a planet with the biosphere, the joy of form, and the importance of listening.
Yeah.
That's yours?
Yeah, that's mine.
There's so much in there. It's so vibrant. Those words are so vibrant. But in talking about your work, of course, we'll be doing that conceptually. But Your work that I've seen is incredibly dynamic. You could see the life forms come through within your sculpting. The color, the forms, and some of the disruption you use with the depiction of animals, both in sculpture and painting, and it's incredibly beautiful and vibrant. And it really engages the viewer. And when I pointed to these words, they're trying to convey some of those pieces. And I had asked you the question as far as, you know, you're an artist and you're talking about a very vibrant component of your work about living in a biosphere, you know, that we're alive, that we're talking about forms. Can you, as a way of getting into your work visually and what you try to do visually, can you describe those words and why you've used those to kind of to try to describe what your work is?
Sure. I think the thing that my work does really well is this empathetic connection that it strikes with the viewer. I think, you know, where people connect with the work right away is through its feeling. And, you know, I've always experienced that idea of feeling as a listening experience. I think I told somebody once that, you know, I always feel like my ears are more like my eyes, and my eyes are more like my ears. When I look at things, there's a listening quality to the way that I'm, you know, maybe processing visual experience and storing things up to use and to translate. And, you know, so there's that component. And then there's this other component, this interior component, which is this sort of door that's open to this big thing. Well, I don't know, but a connection is made when I set my pen down to paper and I decide I'm going to create this animal. I don't usually have a preconceived notion about what I'm creating, particularly the works on paper or the paintings. I just move in that space and let the thing arrive. But it comes at a place of intention. And, you know, I do want to get as close as I can to that experience of being alive. I think now in particular, that's a really vital question, you know, with climate change, with, you know, a lot of political unrest around the world, not just in this country, and also with the scientific advances that we've had, you know, where we're imaging exoplanets, and NASA is going to send probes to Europa and to Enceladus, and Cassini found organic compounds in the geysers coming off Enceladus. There's, you know, activity on Mars that NASA's not really sure, like, what's creating the methane? What's creating the spikes in oxygen? So this idea about what is life, you know, is going to be this next major shift in human consciousness, because we share this experience on this planet. We share this experience with everything else, which supports us in a living ecological context. And, you know, so, like, big picture, well, what's my role as an artist in this picture?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So what is it?
Yeah. And it's to move people out of the unconscious forward into the conscious, into the world, and to make them feel and participate as much as they can in a real human connected way to this thing that we live on. And it's the only body that we know of in the universe right now that can support beings like us and everything else that it supports.
About your work, I mean, I really appreciate your thoughts there, and I actually felt I just learned a whole lot just by listening to your answer, which is my, you know, my selfish way of why I do this podcast. A friend of mine commented when she first saw your images, and it really stuck in my mind. I think her comment was, "It feels like I know these creatures. I feel like they're the friends of mine," or there was a familiarity right off the bat. I had that same impression when I saw them. And I'm talking about the figures, both you sculpt, animal figures you sculpt, yeah, and the paintings. They seem to come from, you know, a very recognizable universe, you know, our biosphere, our universe, but they seem to have a personality or are connected to a world that I think is coming out in your work. My question, make it a little bit more simple, is the animals that show up in your work, are those unique creatures that you know, or are you really trying to kind of translate what's in the natural world into the sculpture or into the painting?
Right. No, it's I'm just the midwife. I really am. I just put myself in a place to be open, and this is what came to me. So I'll go back. I was doing figurative work for a number of years, just strictly as a painter. I just dealt with the figure. I worked through it in an abstract way. I worked through it in a very volatile and expressionistic kind of way. But it was, for a long time, I was just really exploring just human experience, right? And what that meant to be embodied in this human body, and how I could use that in my art to explore that sense of being embodied in this particular human form. And I, you know, looking back on that work, that it had a real there's a negativity to it. It was, you know, critical of a lot of things, a lot of, I don't know, traumas that I had, but traumas that were in the world. You know, my ex-wife was deployed to Iraq twice, and she, you know, there were things that she dealt with while she was there, and then when she returned home. And I did a lot of work in response to that, and it was very negative. It was really raw, and working that way for such a long time, it put me mentally in a really dark place, in a place that was not great for my mental health. And a couple of years ago, I had a real break with that, and I decided that I needed to do this differently, and I needed to take whatever that downward turn thing was in my work and turn it around and turn it outward. And whatever that switch that I flipped to do that, these animals came out of it. I mean, I could tell you, it's like, well, I was inspired by Kuroi and the smile, and I was inspired by, you know, children, and I love children, and I'm thinking about, you know, three generations hence and what people will think about, you know, when they see this work. But really, you know, I don't know where, when I made that flip and moving from this body of figurative work, which was a lot darker, into this other work, which I just started a couple of years ago, which is much more positive. There's something that happened that feels much more encompassing that I don't know how much I can take responsibility for, except that I just got out of the way and let it happen.
So, well, it feels, if you know, just as far as shorthand, it feels like that there was an incredible amount of energy, right? And if it was moving through you, as it kind of was how it manifested. But you notice, I mean, you noticed the shift for you when it happened. And so how has that impacted other aspects? I mean, it's a, you know, it's kind of flip, you know, from one to the other, right? I mean, you ascribe some, you know, like negativity, some strong emotion, maybe some rawness to it. But, you know, you say the animals came from a place where it switched, that energy had gone to. Was it the same current that was running through you? And it sounds like something just happened at yeah. a moment for you.
It's like I changed the shape of the hose. You know, we've all got this thing that flows through us, and everybody can tap it and access it. But, you know, if the doorway or the hose is a particular shape, it shapes what comes out. And I just changed the shape of that, and it just got bigger, and it got happier and kinder and more fun. And it's like I started to really enjoy it, and I really started, you know, to love the sense of play that I was finding in it. And it doesn't matter to me that it comes from my imagination or it's a response to the world. I feel art is just an exploration of truth, and it's a vehicle for finding the truth. So it doesn't need to have the drapings of representation in order to be true. If it comes from a true place and it's it creates this connection with the audience.
Yeah, I want to ask what might sound like a bit of a naive question, but it really comes from my experience. When I see an artist doing two forms, let's say in particular a sculpture for you, mm-hmm. and painting, I started painting a couple years ago, and I'm figuring out that experience, you know, for myself. And then I've been doing that for a little bit, and then there are other forms which, like, I honestly know nothing about. Like, I ask artists how they do it and what it's like. My naive question of not really knowing that much about sculpture, I had one other guest, Claire Papoulis, who was a beginning sculptor, mm-hmm. On the program, but when the moment comes, like, where you're like, I want to create something, or say that energy is flowing through you, what is the experience of painting what that is versus you using your hands in sculpting what that is?
Oh, that's a great question. So I wanted to be a musician. When I was in high school and grade school, I studied flute. I fell in love with it. I studied classical music. I went as deep as I could to go into it. I went to college for about a year as a music major and was in the orchestra. And I just absolutely loved it. It was like I was using both my hands. I was creating sound. And it was like, this is good. This feels like who I'm maybe meant to be in this world, but there's something missing, right? Like, okay, I'm performing music, but what I want to do is create things, and then things happened in my life and I stepped away from that path. And then I decided on painting, went to college, got a BFA in painting, had a really great experience there, great faculty, and spent time just developing my practice as a painter. And then, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I get this. But there was always this block, like years and years and years, like I would work on painting and, you know, I was always feeling like I was moving through this wall, and I hit another wall and hit another wall. Like it was, things weren't flowing. Like there was, and when I took up clay, because I love Picasso and I love that, you know, he started off doing painting, and then he was like making ceramic forms, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Just beautiful work. When I moved into that realm with clay and I was using both hands, there was like this circle that closed in my head. And it was like, I had this light bulb when I was like, oh, okay. So my formative creative experiences where I was really looking at, you know, this, like learning about music, how to play it, how to perform it, how to perform it artistically. I was doing it with both hands. But then when I made this switch into painting, it was like I was only approaching it from a right-hand perspective. And I'm not even really right-handed. My parents say I was supposed to be left-handed, but they kept slapping my left hand when I was.
Oh, goodness. Wow. Yeah.
You know? So, you know, there's this real disconnect with the way I was processing and the way I was moving through painting. And I did, you know, I loved all the painting work that I did. I think I made a really strong body of work throughout my years doing that. But when I figured out I could use both hands and create form in the same way that I was creating drawing, but realize them in space, it was just like, it was like I had all the cylinders operating. It was like all the lights went on.
Did you ever wonder what it would be like if you did develop as a left-hander, what type of left-handed painter you would be?
Right. Or if I'd just be, I don't know, if I would have been a happier child or something. I don't know.
these are unexpected questions. We're talking with Christopher St. John, an artist from Eugene, Oregon, and you listen to the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and we've been talking about his art and the role with its connection to the biosphere, and getting into some, you know, conceptual questions about, you know, why we're doing art. And But this begs the question that I'm going to launch right into here again, Christopher, is we've been talking about art a bunch, but what the heck is art?
Art is this thing that facilitates a connection to the world around us. It's a tool. For the most part, it's a tool that we as people use pretty effectively, to communicate ideas, to communicate experiences, to create experiences, and we can divvy it up and do whatever we want. But I think fundamentally it's about connection, and it's about opening up that deep thing inside of us and sharing that with the world around us. Mathematics has that beauty, and it exists in that realm as well. So,
so I don't miss anything as well. It sounds like you might have encountered or tinkered in other types of art. What type of forms of art have you gone into?
I have a pretty robust practice as a painter. So, I work in oils, I work in acrylics, I do watercolor, I can do ink. I mean, it's just like being a musician where you just have chops, right? You don't necessarily just devote your life to, classical music. If you're a jazz musician, you do all the forms and you can play whatever gig you want. I feel like it's the same for a visual artist. I can, you can do illustration, you can do representation, you can do gouache, you can do, have a broad a base and experience to do that. I've, done sculpture work and metal and sort of assemblage. But clay is the thing that I'm spending a lot of time on right now. And it's only been the last year and a half that I've been really exploring and getting into clay. And it kicked my ass so much.
It's always interesting when you look. Of course, I've seen some of your work online. We communicated a bit, and just trying to. We're always looking at what we see and be like, okay, what is it that they do? what is it? And I'm always interested in. Asking about other types of art that an artist may do, because sometimes we forget that we do it, not necessarily, but sometimes we forget that we do it, or we hadn't thought about doing it. And sometimes I think others see these pieces and they're like, how come aren't you this? And
right.
So I like talking in broad strokes about, how it is that you do your art. Do I understand it correctly that you teach art as well? Is that correct?
Yeah, I teach up here at the Maude Kearns. I teach figure drawing and figure painting classes, which I love doing so much. It is so much fun because the students that come into my class often have no experience with figure drawing, which is great because that means they don't have a lot of preconceptions about how they should be doing it, except for maybe just making a donut or an egg for the head. And I can really come in and shape their approach and talk about, observation and, how observation is the same for everybody. And, your experience matters. And I've been teaching some artist services classes there as well, with some art history topics. I taught the seminar class on art from the 1970s. So we looked at, performance art, and we looked at Chris Burden, and we looked at Linda Bangless, and all these like really just, a lot of that work from the 70s is pretty obtuse. But I came out of the class and teaching that class with a real appreciation for just what they were working with, and especially the time period. And there's like such parallels now, especially with the impeachment. I thought about that a lot teaching the class. But yes, I do teach there.
Yeah, I made it there. Finally, my daughter is a freshman at the University of Oregon, and so I was able to get. I'm able to get to more things there, and what a nice space! I was just floored. It was just beautiful, and of course, I was able to you know, encounter your work in a fan or two of yours just by milling around the grounds. But it's great that they offer classes. And, you know, I asked that because, you know, I always, you know, teaching something is always extremely difficult. And you can have a whole episode around the art of teaching or how that, right. that creative process even happens. But yeah, it's also not an additional challenge, but I'm always very intrigued by how art is taught. And I'd have to say, because I've actually never taken an art class of any form, whether history or creating art. So I'm really fascinated by, you know, how it is that you teach. And it sounds like it's been a good experience for you as well.
Oh, it's been a fantastic experience. I've grown a lot in the last year that I've been teaching there. And I just find the Maude Kearns to be a real solid art hub for the community. It's just, they have such a great mission and they have such great support and they're just growing. And I think it's a real exciting time to be involved with what they're doing now and where they're moving into the future.
I wanted to ask, you know, kind of the seminal question, prior to a couple more questions, the seminal question, the title of the podcast, Something Rather Than Nothing. And, I sent you a note cause I really got caught up and, really thinking about that statement, that, you know, the incredible luck that we have living on a planet with a biosphere, which was intuitive for me, but just hearing it expressed out loud was just kind of just a lovely phrase. And for me, it connects to the bigger questions, the larger questions and concepts of, the main question is, why is there something rather than nothing? Do you know, Christopher?
No, I don't know, but I know that I'm here for a reason, and I know that there's purpose in me being here, and that this life that I have matters. I get to make the meaning in this life, and I get to create the intention in this life, and engaging with that idea that I get to create this and move forward into this world, which sees back at me. Not just me, but, you know, things look back, animals look back at me, people look back at me, you know, there's a real beauty and excitement in that. And, you know, realizing that, oh, I have things to offer to this, and oh, we can shape this conversation, and oh, we can push this in this direction. Oh, yeah, and there's these problems. Is this a negative thing, or is this an opportunity to do some good and try to change the conversation and move things forward? What can I do as an artist, as a creative person, in that context? You know, it's so, you know, people always come up to me, like, I do booth shows to make a living or help, you know, help pay the bills and stuff like that. And, you know, people often come up to me and say, oh, this must be so much fun to do. And I kind of groan and go, oh, yeah, you know, it's mostly a lot of work, right? It's just like any other 9-to-5, except, you know, my days are more like 16 hour days, you know, usually just get wake up, work in the studio, work all day, make product, do things, you know, but it's a real privilege being able to do that. And it's a real privilege knowing that I have these skills that somehow, for some inexplicable reason, were handed down to me, you know, through genetics or whatever. And I have the luck to say, oh, I can do something with that. And so when something happens and it delights me and it's like, you know, something I've never seen before, and I can meet that with joy, there's real beauty in that. And there's so much satisfaction in that. And yes, it is fun. Oh my God, it is so much fun. And I love, you know, the idea that as artists, we can convince people to engage with the world in a way that comes from that positivity, that comes from that sense that, yeah, you can do something that somebody hasn't done before, and you can do something that doesn't require approval, and you can float a new idea, and you can struggle with it, and love yourself for that struggle, and maybe change something.
And I really appreciate that. I mean, I appreciate, your willingness to take on these questions. But a lot of why I ask them is I find that questions and, thinking about a lot of the things that we've been talking about is creative unto itself. And it sparks thinking about, what we're doing. And I even said that in a couple answers you're given, but I'm hosting here, but I'm trying not to get lost into the thoughts of, of what you're expressing. So it is a great, I really appreciate hearing from you and you taking the time. I got a couple other pieces, a little bit shorter kind of statements or questions. If I've asked you a bunch of these type of questions and the thought provoking. Who would you like to hear answer these questions? If you had to pick somebody, a person or two, you'd be like, I'd really like to hear their answers to these questions. Who would that be?
Right now, it would be Donald Nally, the conductor of the Crossing Choir, with whom I've been working. I have a lot of respect for the work that he's been doing with the choir and the composers that they've commissioned for their exhibition, for their performance season. And I think we share a lot of ideas around the role of the arts in terms of in an age of climate change and this extinction event that we're living through. And I would love to hear his response to these things. I have deep respect for what he does, and the choir is just absolutely phenomenal, and it's been a real privilege working with him.
Yeah, thanks for that. And let me press pause right there. You mentioned climate change, and I haven't asked this question before, but it's such a historical problem we're dealing with right now, with what's happening to an environment and the displacement of peoples and death and what is occurring and the continued battle to try to convey that or express some truths about it. With those things in place, has the role of art or the artist changed because of that fact, circumstance at present?
I think so. What I hope changes is that there's less attention paid to human stories and human faces and human presences, and more attention paid to the world that they live in. I think that has to be the fundamental shift in terms of our consciousness. And I think there was an exhibition up at Pottery Northwest in Seattle called Unwedged. I was in that show, and reading through the catalog, a number of artists talked about their connection to the environment, their connection to this issue around climate change, and trying to use their work to address these problems. So I think there's a shift that's happening. I think artists are tackling this. I think artists are, trying to wrap their heads around these problems. But it's hard to do when you're constantly told that, well, this only matters if it has a human context. If it has a story attached to it, how is this relevant to people? Well, people don't support the health of a forest, the fungi that live in the soil and make all those connections with each other. And, that's what supports the health of the forest. Just things like that.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, which seems simple, is a radical refocus. I think it's so important. And I think, for anybody creating or doing anything at this moment with, the scale of the problem, mm-hmm. with what's going on with the climate, kind of begs an answer of, some of the more fundamental questions. What are we doing? how is what I'm doing helping to improve, the situation, and those, fundamental questions.
Yeah, I really struggle with that. And I struggle with, you know, is this enough? What I do as, you know, I have talent and talent just wants to be used. And they're like, is it enough? And I really, really grapple with that, you know, and the things that I'm making.
Yeah, though the question might be difficult, at least it's the right question to be to be grappling with. So Christopher St. John, we've been speaking to, finally, Christopher, one of the things at the end I like to do is just to make sure if folks who are listening, you know, they want to, you know, see some of those images of yours, whether, you know, in person when they're displayed or online. The fundamental piece is, you know, how can listeners connect to your work in your art?
So I think a great way to connect with my work right now is to go to the crossinquired.org, their website. I did the artwork for their 2019-2020 concert season, and they really did a great job of pairing my work with their messages and their performances around these issues of climate change and extinction. And I think it's great to see it in that context, rather than to see an image alone and say, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. But it's like, no, but there's this is the direction that this leans in, and there's, you know, there's collaboration that's involved, and there's a sound component to this, and, you know, there's people that are moving into the world with this work in a space that I think is much more engaging with the viewer than just by going to my website, although I would not dissuade people from visiting my website, which is stjohn.com. And I'm also on Instagram, which I post a lot of things on there because it happens to be this thing that artists use for promotion right now.
Yeah. Thank you for all of that, Christopher. I'm lucky enough to have recently encountered your work, and I really appreciate it. I've just been enthralled with what you're doing there, and I like how it's just by seeing it and my engagement with it. It prompts a lot of questions in my mind, which I think are the important ones, or at least if they're not the most important, they're the ones I'm interested in. So they're important to me. I appreciate you taking the time with me and with the program. And I want to wish you the best of luck. And again, it's been a deep pleasure, Christopher.
Thank you, Kenneth. Thank you so much for having me on and allowing me to do this. I was a little nervous at first. I'm like, oh, okay, it wasn't so bad. It was okay.
It's hopefully a great experience, and you know, I think it's something that I found with people that are listening. They really like.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing.